Brett Veach has never been scared to pick up the phone. He's a general manager, and I think he's the best in the game. So some names that you'll hear over the next couple of days. You look at Amari Cooper making a lot of money in Cleveland. Like, do you not call up Andrew Berry and say, what would you be willing to? I look at DeAndre Hopkins in Tennessee. Makes a ton of money, but is there something we can work out contract-wise? I said this, and I got a lot of pushback. It doesn't come from the Rams guys, but I would call on Cooper Kupp. I would see. I would call every team. I would call 31 teams.
Peter Schrager on the Chiefs and the spot they find themselves in with both Hollywood Brown and Rashee Rice looking like they're going to miss extended periods of time. We know Brown's out for the year. Rice, it's feared, will be. Was looking up last night's game, the Seahawks and the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
And fans of Everybody Eats would be very happy. Seattle completed passes to 10 players.
Detroit. 10 different players?
10 different players caught a pass. The Seahawks also...
Including A.J. Barner, who's just stealing fantasy points from everybody out
there.
He
caught two, including a
two touchdowns?
Two catches and one touchdown.
Yeah. Brutal. He tried to jump over a guy.
They had... The Seahawks had the most first downs ever in a game in which a team lost.
Really?
Yep. 38 first downs.
Timo Risk from Pro Football Focus was he was getting yelled at for this take on Twitter this morning. He basically said, if we're calling Jared Goff's game the perfect game, what do we call the game of the quarterback who was the best quarterback on the field last night?
Geno threw for 395 and a touchdown and a pick.
He did some there was one play where he like spun out of a sack and then found Lockett down the field, or maybe it was Smith and Jigba down the field. He had some crazy good passes in that game.
Well, Seattle's a good model here if we're looking at a way that I'd like the Bills to be built. I mean, they have a couple tight ends they throw to sometimes, but not much. And they throw to the backs.
Yeah.
But they really are Everybody Eats. JSN, 8 catches. DK Metcalf, 7 catches. Lockett, 5 catches. Charbonnet, 5 catches. Kenneth Walker, 4. Bobo, 3. Like, this whole idea that you're going to be good as long as you spread it around has always been a little bit dicey to me. You're good if you spread it around as long as those players are good.
Well, them being good is important here.
It's very important. DK Metcalf got 7 for 104. He also had a fumble in the game. Whereas, you know, if you're DK Metcalf guy in your offense that is Everybody Eats is Mac Hollins, that's not the same Everybody Eats. You know?
No, right. Like, what's better? The Everybody Eats that, by the way, Houston talked about before their season, where Houston's a team like this too, where Collins gets 10, Diggs gets 7, Dell gets 5, Schultz gets 4. Or the Bills, or a team that has 9 guys catch it and 7 of them get 1.
Yeah.
What's better? Because in one instance, everybody is still leading. You just have 4 guys that are really good that are all getting a big workload, or would you rather have 9 guys where 7 of them are replacement level and they're all catching one pass? Like, to me, you can have Everybody Eats easily and just not have, you know, or just have guys that are pretty good. Have multiple guys that are good.
Well,
like, part of maybe why this got brought up and has been like catching fire is last year didn't feel as much like Everybody Eats because early in the year it was only Diggs that was good. If they had had, you know,
other
you
players.
Mentioned Jameson Williams, I guess he was suspended for gambling. If they had drafted
Christian Watson,
Zay Flowers, it wouldn't have been Everybody Eats because Diggs wouldn't have been on his own.
Right.
It wouldn't have been Gabe Davis as your second best receiver, who you're seeing in Jacksonville right now without Josh Allen. That guy is not very good. He's not a very good wide receiver.
803-0550. Saw Benjamin Solak, back of the Chiefs here for a minute. He's got a piece up about how he doesn't think trading for a receiver for them will help.
Like, for who? For the Bills?
For the Chiefs.
For the Chiefs.
Like, it's not going to save them. Trading for a receiver is not going to save the Chiefs. So I'll get you a little bit of that because I think that's something that, of course, here's always part of the mix. If the Bills thought this was a transition year, right? It's week 4. Now I'm back to talking like they can win the Super Bowl. So if you have been a little tired of the doom and gloom off of one loss to Baltimore, which I don't really think has been much doom and gloom, it's just been, you know, people talking about they got hammered. If the transition year all of a sudden looks like, hey, take a look around. What? The Chiefs are toast. Okay, what else? The Texans don't look like they looked. The Jaguars are dead. The Bengals are 1-3.
Dolphins and Jets both. The Dolphins are definitely dead.
The Dolphins are toast.
And the Jets don't look good.
The Jets don't look any good. 5 weeks from now, we might think it's Buffalo and Baltimore. And the Chiefs are going to make it, but they don't look the same. So then Brandon Bean has to ask himself a question like, all right, well, you were about to say transition year.
Yep.
Now we're halfway through the season. And a good example of this is the year they break the drought. What do? They're 5-1.
Yep. 5-2. 5-2. Yep.
That's a rebuild year. Trade away good players, get draft picks, rebuild. 5-2. Trade for Kelvin Benjamin, baby. Let's go make the playoffs.
Yeah.
You become a buyer. And I wonder if the Bills, in any circumstance, would think they could be into a buyer. You know, GMs love to say stuff like you're never one player away, when in reality, you're always a series of one players away. And I'm not sure what the price they'd be willing to pay is. We've thrown out the idea of Amari Cooper, or maybe it's linebacker help, or maybe it's a defensive end, or maybe it's a safety.
Or a kicker.
It might be a kicker.
Really,
it could be a kicker. So I just find it interesting. And here are the Chiefs, their receiver problems. What could they really do?
They're also, we've talked about a lot of their different weapons for this. Like, part of how you'll get to, hey, should they trade for a receiver at the deadline or a weapon at the deadline is if we get more games like last Sunday where it feels like you're wanting that. You're wanting one more guy that you can just count on, that you know is dangerous, and ideally somebody that runs down the field. I was definitely surprised that through three games, they looked as good as they did without really any semblance of a downfield passing threat. At least not a player that is dangerous in that way. Like, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, in theory, is that type of player. He just is not a productive player anymore. And that was evident last year in Kansas City when he had 300 yards on the field all year for them. He's just not, he doesn't rate in that way. They don't have a legitimately good player that is threatening down the field. I don't think right now. And, you know, this is a different element of this, but you mentioned like the up the seam routes that we saw from Dalton Kincaid in training camp or in the preseason or in the playoff game last year against Pittsburgh. That was the touchdown he caught, right? He's just running up the seam, past the linebackers. He's using his athleticism, and he's down the field. And part of the plan, the blueprint of, hey, this can work without Diggs this year, this can work without a true number one, I think was based in Dalton Kincaid's going to be a star tight end for you.
How far off of that is he?
He's got 100 yards in four games. I don't know. Is he making a substantial impact? He's getting attention. Defenses are paying attention to him. Yep. At least Arizona was for sure. Like, he is a threat. But he is not putting up giant production, right?
No.
Is he on pace to match what he even did last year? He's not, by the way. Last year, 42 yards per game. This year, 33 yards per game. If I told you Dalton Kincaid's stat line was going to see regression, that would be if I told you that in May or June or July, you would have thought that's a red flag.
It's probably worth pointing out they have played two full halves of football.
That is. No, you're right. That's right. Because I made that point about Shakir, too.
Yeah.
He's really played more like three games.
Yeah, the second half against Miami and the second half against Jacksonville. You know, that removes some.
But we didn't bring him up earlier when, like, where is there more to come from? There is more there. There better be more there, right? More than 30 yards a game?
What's his career high for targets in a game?
He had 7 against Baltimore. Do we want to bet that's near the top? Kincaid's career high in targets in a game through 20 games. He had 8 in Miami to close last season. He had 8 in Kansas City last year in the regular season. He had 11 in Cincinnati. That's his career high. He had 11 targets against Cincinnati. So one time he's at double digit. But you, like, the Chiefs are going to turn to Kelce here, right?
Yep,
like,
yep.
They're out of ideas around him, so it has to be Kelce. We can't kind of slow play him and have him be fresh by the playoffs. Like, we need him.
Kincaid is 12th in targets among tight ends right now.
Okay.
But again, I almost want to, I don't know if I should give him a full extra game here. He really has been I don't say sold. Like, people, it's believable. The talent, the ability. But we just don't see that many scripted plays, game plans that run through him
right.
the way it was kind of sold like he would. Think of him like a receiver. The reality is, you want to play that game. If he's a receiver, it's way worse.
Yeah.
Your expectations for tight ends are 85 yards is a really good game.
I was going to say, you just compare him to tight ends. If you compared him to the receivers, would he be like 80th?
You'd be furious.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing about think of him as a receiver. Like, tight ends don't put up receiver numbers usually. And if you're going to use this guy like they wanted to when they drafted him, if you wanted me to think of him like a receiver, you draft the receiver in the first round, and in his second year, he's got 13 targets. Mm-hmm. Or, sorry, 13 catches in four games. I'd be like, what's wrong?
Right. So maybe there's more to unlock there?
I would think so.
Or it will be disappointing.
It's another part of the everybody eats thing. It's like, wait a minute, why? Why is everybody doing it? I've got a first-round matchup nightmare tight end. He should be getting a focal point of this offense.
Yeah.
Which, you know, defenses are focusing on him to a degree as well.
Well, that would be a fear, I think, is are the Bills' top weapons capable of having more attention paid to them and still thriving? Like, you can sit up here and say that forcing the ball to Diggs over and over and over was a bad thing for the offense. The one thing I don't think you can argue is that having a player that talented, especially in the first 3.5 years, if you want to just use that timeline, having a player that good, that talented, drawing attention, drawing double teams, drawing the number one corner over to his end, it makes things easier for the rest of them. I think it would make things easier for Khalil Shakir for a full season if he had a legit elite number one somewhere else on the offense. I think it would probably be easier for Dalton Kincaid. That's not to say, by the way, they can't do it. It'll be a little harder, I think, because if you're a defense going in to play the Bills, if there was an elite number one, you would have to focus your attention there and have to say, we're just going to have to live with Kincaid and Shakir. Like, we're going to have to hope that we can match them up one-on-one more often, that we can kind of pay less attention to them and hope that they don't beat us. But that's what we have to do. Versus now, you go into a game playing the Bills, if I'm a defensive coordinator, if I'm the Texans getting ready to play them on Sunday, I don't have to worry about that elite number one. So I'm saying, all right, guys, we're going to stop Shakir, we're going to stop Kincaid. We're going to make it harder on those two to get open. We're going to make it harder on the Bills to get those guys involved. We'll live with Mac Hollins getting 6 targets because we're going to take these two guys away. That is something that is going to, I think, hurt them more this year than when they've had Diggs in the past. Doesn't mean they can't overcome it. I just think they have to find a way to get those guys open with more attention being paid to them.
803-0550. If you want to throw this our way, throw any thought on this, on what you took from the Baltimore game, and this general conversation about whether that's Kincaid or Diggs for this week.
It'll be Diggs week.
It is Diggs week. I have this.
There will be cameras all on him and Allen and pregame stuff, right? Everything.
No. I have this thing where I remember him positively as a player that we really liked.
Yeah.
That's just me, though.
Will that change for everybody as it gets further and further away? Like, time heals all wounds, right? Like,
it doesn't heal. Time does not heal all wounds because Eichel will never be remembered well, right? I also don't hate him.
But what? The difference there is the team stunk.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah. Maybe not all wounds. It will heal this one. Because they were great. He's the best receiver in the team's history.
Arguably.
Like, he...
It's him and Molds and Andre.
Yeah, like, Hasek was hated when he left, right? And now he's remembered fondly.
Yes.
So
there are some that didn't blame Hasek same way, like, your organization's not serious.
I just think the further and further away you get from it, I mean, not too long from now, maybe 5 years, I don't know, but eventually Diggs won't even be playing anymore, and it'll be looking back on his career and the crazy numbers he put up and the fact that they did. I mean, if McDermott is going to get credit from some, not everybody, of, hey, ended the drought, totally respect what he did for the team, respect what he did for the community, right? Like, that sentiment is out there about McDermott breaking the drought and bringing the Bills back to respectability. Like, Diggs is a part of that. Diggs did not win the Super Bowl here, but he was a part of the team ascending from nowhere, drought, down in the dumps, didn't even feel like a real team, to now they are on prime time all the time. They are a great team. They're winning all the games. They're winning all the divisions. I don't know. I just think it's, people are still living in the moment with him, and it's not, for him, it's not going to last. Maybe you're right about Eichel.
We have any revenge games come up? Skinner. Here's one that's, I think he's, as we're like talking about guys that have left, Skinner in Edmonton, that starts soon. He's skating in a line with Dreisaitl.
Yes, he is. And he's going to score 30 goals.
I think an awful lot of Sabres fans will be very happy for Jeff Skinner. I don't think there's really much.
He would get cheered when he comes back, I bet.
Yeah, I think so for sure.
He was a well-liked player.
Why isn't he, you know, what's to dislike? His defensive zone metrics. Like, okay, that stuff doesn't really move the needle for booze.
Right, right.
So I think he'll be...
Do the Bills have a home game against somebody important that's coming up? Poyer will be back, right? For the first time. The Houston game not being at home is
huge.
Yeah. Because that would be...
Can we be a little thankful for that?
That the game's not at home?
Yes.
I mean, how bad do you think it really would have been? You think like every time he caught the ball, there would have been boos?
Yes.
Okay, and he would have got big ones before the game? Do they do tribute videos? Would they have gotten a tribute video like before the game or something?
Great question. No idea.
I don't know if they really do that in the NFL. Did Gabe Davis get one at the Jaguar game? I was not there. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Josh, was there a Gabe Davis tribute video at the Jaguars game?
Not that I remember, but okay. I do remember one of his catches. There was a lot of boos.
Yes, that I heard.
I joined in just because I was wearing a Gabe Davis jersey. I didn't want to be seen as a sympathizer or something.
Yeah, there were definitely Gabe Davis boos, so it would be very different, I think, if this game were in Buffalo on Sunday.
Yes.
Nothing very, for Mitch Morse, though, that I saw.
That's probably expected. Revenge games the rest of the season, I'm not really seeing much. Part of it is all their guys are like... Well, Hyde's not playing, I guess. How many of their guys that left are actually like key important players on other teams? Maybe Tremaine Edmonds when he comes back eventually? I don't know.
Edmonds. When do the Bears come here?
Not this year.
No.
And they play that division? No, they don't. They just play the Lions. So multiple years. It'll be multiple years before they're back.
Thursday Night Football is Falcons and Bucks.
Okay.
Not bad.
Do you see what the Monday night game next or the Monday night game next week is?
No.
It's a standalone. Okay. You guess where it is. Guess where the game is.
I'm sorry. Of course. I did see this because watching last night when they did the commercial, hey, coming up next Monday, we'll be at Arrowhead. Oh, shocker. Great. Excited for that.
I think Saints Chiefs.
I think the Saints will beat them. I think the Saints will beat the Chiefs.
Is it not the most annoying thing in the league right now that the Chiefs are 4-0?
It's one of them.
They don't look right.
Do you know who the worst offense in football is, by the way? According to how often they turn not the Chiefs. How often they turn possession into a new set of downs.
Who's the worst?
Do you get a first down?
Is it New England?
It's the Chargers.
Really?
It's the Chargers. And if you watch the Chiefs and Chargers, the Chargers had a 10-0 lead, and they needed to win that game 10-0 because they were not going to score again.
Yeah. Did we bet them?
No.
I wanted to bet against them this year. They are totally leaning into the ground and pound game, right? Totally leaning into it. They want to run the ball. And
it's horrible to watch.
It's so unfun.
And Justin Herbert has no help, and he's hurt.
Him being hurt, too, I think, is a fact. His ankle is screwed up. But here are the Chargers again. Just like somebody challenged the Chiefs in that division. And it's always, I'm always staring at the Chargers for that. You're the team that should do it. You've got a talented quarterback that you should be able to put up a fight. And they're just never close. So lucky the Chiefs get to play in that division.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, the Bills' division's not looking great right now either, so... It's not like the Bills have a giant challenge in front of them.
The North and the South look like
the two best divisions
in the AFC.
Yeah.
All right. Counting down the days to Bills Texans, and also just a couple days from Sabre season opener, Friday, 1 o'clock?
Friday at 1, and then Saturday at 10 a.m.
Love it. Set up against some Premier League action, or is the Premier League off next week?
I think they have games.
They do have games.
I had some friends that were asking last night, like, hey, should we go out for the Sabre game on Saturday at 10 a.m.? And one bar was mentioned that is like a soccer bar. Like, oh, I bet they'll have the game. I'm like, you're going to walk in wanting the Sabre game, and you're going to be met with like Brentford and Fulham. And are they turning that game off for you
No.
for the Sabres game? I'm not sure.
Saturday, 10 a.m.?
Saturday at 10 a.m.
Arsenal plays.
Ooh! What are you going to watch? Double screen?
Yeah, sure.
Who they play?
Someone big? No.
Okay.
Southampton, who just got beat by Bournemouth.
Like, you could 3-1. Skip that. They'll win that game.
Maybe. Listen, if the Sabres go 2-0 to start, you will have a full 5 days to hype yourself up for the home opener against the Kings.
Mm-hmm.
And Lindy's return, like, just, I want the Sabres, of course, to win their games. But if they can win these first two or look exciting in these first two, get juice into the building early this year, it'd be nice. It's a long season.
Is it?
And they've been out of it, you know, early before.
How important are these two games then? Because of the 5 day break in between before the home opener? Because if you win, there'll be excitement. You win both, especially. There'll be a lot of excitement. On the flip end,
if you lose both... Then it's just Bill season.
Then we just ignore it for 5 days and like, oh, Sabres home opener?
Yeah.
That's probably right.
803-0550 to join us. Jeremy and Joe on WGR. Want to play a fun game of What If I Told You?
Sure.
Okay, Joe. You're going to go back in time to 1997. You're
1997. I'm 2.
2.
Yeah.
This date in 1997, the Buffalo Sabres earned a 3-1 win against the Blues in Lindy Ruff's debut as head coach in the NHL.
Wow.
Imagine that day. I tell you, I can see the future. This dude's going to coach the team in 2024. You're going to say, "What? How? How?"
Yeah.
Just a cool 27 years later.
27 years later, I'm about to maybe... Okay, no, it's just off. Okay. It's almost the exact amount of days... Here you go.
I've got another fun question for you, by the way.
It's almost the exact amount of days from today to the last Sabre playoff game to that day you just said to the last Sabre playoff game.
Gotcha.
If you made a timeline.
Yeah.
And the first part of the timeline, point A, is Lindy's debut. And point C is today. Right smack dab in the middle is their last playoff game.
Well, if I had the ability in 1997 to tell you, see that guy over the bench right there? Who just won his first NHL game?
Yeah.
He's going to coach this team in 2024. You would say, how many cups are they going to win?
That's probably right. I would have thought things have gone really well. Yeah.
And they went pretty well his first in here. You know, like, we'll talk to
zero cups, but they have had four owners and a bunch of coaches in between and GMs. And how many captains?
Oh,
10?
A lot of those.
12?
We'll talk to Lindy tomorrow at 8 a.m. He'll be calling in from Prague as the Sabres are out there getting ready for this game, this season opening series with New Jersey.
Lance Lysowski's tweeted out from Prague, the posters all around. It's Palat for the Devils everywhere, and it's Dahlin for the Sabres everywhere. We feel like we're missing out not being in Prague. Prague seems like a city that I hear great things about by anybody that's ever gone to Europe.
Yeah. Would have been a good trip.
Be a cool destination city. Brian Koziol, I believe, is going.
Yes, that's right.
So I'm sure he'll have a good time there.
It's exciting.
Yep.
What day did they leave? What day did the Devils leave? I need to know which team's going to win based on what day they left.
We're going to hear that as a storyline next week when the Bills are getting ready to play the Jets, right? Because the Jets are coming back from London.
Mm-hmm. Which it might be harder to come back.
Harder to come back than going out there in the first place? That's probably right.
Need some trivia. I'm in the mood.
I had some... I don't know how good it is. I had some Dikembe Mutombo
huh?
trivia that was emailed to me.
That he played for?
Yeah, teams that he played for. He's Georgetown.
Yep.
So, but when is he playing college basketball?
Oh, the.
The 80s?
Than that? Georgetown had a series, like Ewing, Mutombo, Alonzo Mourning. Like, they had a
series. Okay, right, yeah.
Like, just, they dominated the paint for, you know, a decade.
Yeah. Did you hate them?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're required. Syracuse.
Yeah, that's required. Yeah. I'm just making sure.
Yep.
But that's not true anymore, right?
Sure it is. I mean,
don't rate the same, right?
They don't really rate. The rivalry's dead. The Big East, of course, is dead.
Yeah.
So it's not the same. But especially, I mean, in the 80s, Syracuse, Georgetown, everything was smaller. You know, you didn't have access to every single rivalry around the world. Yeah. Now, if you want to be a part of Auburn, Alabama, you can watch Auburn, Alabama. If you want to be a part of Ohio State, Michigan, you can do that. Syracuse, Georgetown, back in the day, was Yankees, Red Sox for, you know, Central New York. It was my two favorite teams are Syracuse and anybody that plays Georgetown. That was the shirt. And, yeah.
So would you have hated Mutombo?
He was a little bit before I knew what was going on, I think.
Okay. 91 is his last year at Georgetown.
Okay. So I'm 12. So it's from when I'm 8 to 12. So yeah. I would have known Mutombo a little bit. Ewing comes after him? Or Ewing is
no,
before
Ewing's
him?
No, Ewing's before him.
A Mourning comes after him.
Mourning's after.
Okay.
So Mourning would have been more in your heyday a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, it didn't even really matter. It was the colors, yeah. It was the logo.
It was
a great rivalry. It was awesome.
Who are the six teams in the NBA that Dikembe Mutombo played for, passing away yesterday at the age of 58?
Okay, I'm ready for this.
Six teams. Mutombo.
Mutombo played, you know, you should refer to this game as Who Wants to Six Mutombo?
Yeah.
You know that famous line, Who Wants to Six Mutombo?
Anyway, no.
Look it up.
Wait, yes I do. Okay. Never mind. Yes, I do.
So who wants to six Mutombo? Six teams Dikembe Mutombo played for. Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
The Nuggets.
The Nuggets is where he debuted, first five seasons. His number is retired by the Nuggets.
The Hawks.
The Hawks is where he went after that. So you're in order here.
Hold on. Let me pull it up.
Four-time defensive player of the year. The only other players ever to do that, Ben Wallace and Rudy Gobert, by the way.
Okay. More Mutombo.
Mutombo.
I'm going to like make a list of, I think he went here.
Denver to Atlanta to.
I'm writing down my candidates.
Man, he played a long time.
Yeah.
He played in 2009. That's wild. He was still playing in 2009.
I'm not quite cheating at this game, but.
By the way, this is the NBA on NBC theme, and that is back this year. The NBA will be on NBC this year for the first time in like 20 years.
I want to say the Suns.
I do not have the Suns. No Suns.
Celtics?
Nope.
Heat?
Nope.
Mavericks?
Nope.
All right. I think I'm out.
You're right. 2 for 6?
Yeah.
That's a poor effort.
It is tough.
Houston?
I said the Rockets.
Did you say the Rockets?
Yeah.
Did he?
I did.
I didn't hear Rockets. He ended his career with the Rockets. He played for the 76ers for 2 years.
Yeah.
He played for the Knicks.
That I don't remember at all.
For a year. Mutombo on the Knicks. And then he played for the Nets for 24 games also.
He was a member of the Denver Nuggets team that knocked off the top seed Seattle Supersonics in a best of five. 8-1, which never happens in the NBA.
Right. Is his finger wag like top five sports, what would you call it, celebration or
they
trash
made
talk?
It illegal.
Who did?
The NBA.
Really?
Yes.
You can't do the finger wag?
No.
You're telling me.
They made
me
it a technical
wait
foul.
A minute, wait a minute. You're telling me, because this is going to make me mad, if on opening night somebody has a block and then in memory, in honor of Dikembe Mutombo, they do the finger wag, they're getting a technical foul?
Yes.
Oh, that's absurd.
You know what? It might have only been banned for a season. Okay. In the late 90s, it was banned for a season.
Okay, but it's back?
Now, you're allowed to do it as long as it's directed at the crowd.
Oh, my goodness.
Not at the player.
It's not the same. Not the same.
I know.
That's so lame. That is the lamest thing ever. Oh, you could do it, but you can't point it at the guy. Get out of here, NBA. Sports. So wimpy.
Jason writes in, this music makes
can't
me
offend,
think of,
can't offend the other player. Right. You got the block on them. You're just trash talking. That's all it is.
You don't want the finger wag. Don't bring that weak stuff in here.
Yeah.
Send it out. Jason writes in, this music makes me think of Ahmad Rashad. Am I remembering that right? And shout out to 1979 Babies. That's me. Yeah, I think Ahmad Rashad. I'm also thinking of Summer Sanders. She had the NBA coverage.
I don't know who that is. Rasul Douglas had the finger wag, by the way, to Gabe Davis 2 weeks ago, if anybody noticed that.
Inside stuff, yeah. Summer Sanders, NBA inside stuff.
Okay.
From 98 to 2006. Oh, and Willow Bay. I remember her.
Yep.
Yep. The NBA. So this music is back.
Yes, this music is back. I believe they're recording an updated version, which that I don't need. They could just have whatever.
Hey, the Bills are signing someone off the Falcons practice squad, which means he's on the active roster now. Defensive tackle Zion Logue is joining the Bills.
Sounds made up.
According to Tom Pelissero.
Zion Logue? All right.
I got to find this
out. The Bills have a Zion.
Chris Brown says that Jordan dunked on Mutombo and gave him a finger wag. I got to see this dunk. I don't remember that. There was a highlight going around of Mutombo and Jordan. They had like a long-standing thing where the All-Star game or something, Mutombo wanted Jordan to buy him dinner. Like, you still owe me dinner. And the whole thing sounded like Kenny Banya with Jerry Seinfeld. Like, that doesn't count. That wasn't a dinner. I was watching some clip of those too. Mutombo was great.
I had a hot dog for lunch. I'm watching it right now. Jordan does the finger wag.
Yeah.
Also, Shaq apparently did the same thing, although Shaq might have done it the year that it was banned. Or no, he did it at Mutombo. And he got a thing for it.
One other thing I remember about Mutombo is, again, like, he's one of my birthday bros, June 25th. I remember at one point they put his full name on the screen, and it's more than just like Dikembe Mutombo.
It's not just Dikembe Mutombo.
No, it's, if I'm doing this best I can from Wikipedia, Dikembe Mutombo Polando Mukamba Jean-Jacques Wamutombo. Like a longer name.
Yeah.
Congolese American. Great nickname, Mount Mutombo. He was great. A lot of humanitarian work in his life.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of that, right?
Nine siblings. Yeah. He spoke, how about this? Like, he spoke English, French, Spanish, Portuguese, and five Central African languages.
Wow. Holy cow.
Eight-time All-Star.
Yep. Mentioned the four defensive player of the years.
Three-time all-defensive first team.
Yeah.
How funny is that, by the way? Four-time, he was the defensive player of the year. He only made the all-defensive first team three times. How's that possible?
Yeah, that doesn't
One
make
time
sense.
you were actually the best defensive player, but didn't make the first team.
Yeah.
And that would have been 1995. He made all-defensive second team.
Is he the all-time 55?
Yes.
Yes? It's a linebacker number, right?
Junior Seau? Is he 55 or 56?
No, that's 55. So Junior Seau would be right there. And then did, like, Terrell Suggs wore 55? But, like, is he...
Okay. Do we have...
Maybe it's Mutombo.
Do we have a Steelers player over the years?
That wore 55?
Like Joey Porter?
Okay, but I don't think that rates to eight-time All-Star, Hall of Famer.
No, I think it's Mutombo.
Defensive Player of the Year. Mutombo, the all-time 55. I'm okay with that.
The first internet search I have brought back, Seau, Suggs, Mutombo. Derek Brooks.
Okay.
Oral Hershiser.
Linebacker.
And the sixth one is Tim Lincecum. That's where we pretty much, you know, Kiki Vandeweghe, Hideki Matsui.
Jochen Hesch. Probably not on that list. Just a hunch.
All right, Extendo Sports coming up. We'll get you off to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And somewhere along the way, try to learn a little bit about Zion Logue off the practice squad of the Falcons. So that means he's on the active roster. We'll see another move somewhere. Who's getting cut?
Right. Right, I think someone has to be cut, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Unless someone's getting moved to IR. But they're not. Who's that?
I mean, the only candidate would be what? Rap? Which is not going to be him.
You're not doing it.
Who else got
Johnson's
hurt?
Almost back, so it's not. You're not doing that now. Yeah, someone's probably just getting caught.
Someone's going to go.
Yeah.
All right. 803-0550. Extendo Sports. Maybe we get that answer soon.
Breaking sports news airs first here. Guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550. 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
Kevin Cole has his Week 5 power rankings up. And he has the Bills.
Number two.
Ahead of the Ravens, by the way.
Boy, they're going to be so mad about that.
Ravens fans will find that. Pro Football Network has the Bills number four. Behind the Lions, the Chiefs, and the 49ers. Also ahead of the Ravens. The Commanders are going to be the hot team in power rankings this week.
Yeah, as they should be. Aaron Schatz has the Saints as the fourth best 2-2 team in the history of his DVOA. They are at Kansas City. They can win that game. I know that they won't. I know that what will happen is, in the final minute, Gene Steratore will be called in. Actually, it's a Monday Night Football game. So the rules analyst will be called on to explain why a flag was thrown and if it should be a penalty or not. But either way, it will benefit the Chiefs, and they will win a game by a point or three.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be left to say, like, well, they're 5-0.
You know, we really should be talking more about how Patrick Mahomes owes Steve Spagnuolo a lot right now.
Yeah, you're right about that. He is not.
It's like, you know what, Pat? You're okay. You only got. I'm just gonna. They scored 10 in the first quarter, and I got them. They're not gonna score a single point the rest of the game. I mean, he's had a top level defense for a full calendar year now. Like, how many points does Mahomes have to score in a game to win? Last week it was 11. Week before that it was 18. Week before that was 26, and they got that 21. Like, how often do the Chiefs have to score a lot? They don't, because their defense is really good, and Spagnuolo has been incredible. Mahomes owes him.
Yep. Okay, we're back tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll have Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, 7:30. We'll talk about, you know, how to fix this offense and get it back on track after a rough game in Baltimore. And, of course, the defense, too. Joe Biscaglia has suggested that maybe an injury to Austin Johnson on the Bills' defensive line is where this new Zion Logue will fit in. He's been added from the Falcons practice squad. So, Joe Marino, Locked On Bills tomorrow. Lindy Ruff tomorrow from Europe as the Sabres get closer and closer to their season opener, which will be Friday afternoon. We'll check in with Sal, all that good stuff. So, we'll chat tomorrow. Cheers.